if you have time on your hands and you're being under hammered, or not enough of your time is being taken by myself, by all means, of course, read the other documents in this volume and in Leo the 13th. Leo the 13th is not always so easy to disentangle, but the doctrine is always the same. These popes of the encyclicals, and notably Leo the 13th and Pius 10th, they're basically always saying the same thing. They're always attacking the same error of the modern world. By the end, we may be able to put together, I may try to put together a chart of the modern era, the whole era in all its parts, and then the Catholic truth opposite. I've got such a chart, something like such a chart somewhere. I'll see if I can find it and put it together. In the meantime, the Sion, says Sion Mountain. That's how you pronounce it, okay? Sion. Sionda Mountain, Sion. So double L in French, like that's pronounced like a Y. Okay. Let's move on. We are in the heart of the encyclical, which is doctrine. The heart of the Pope's the crucial section in all of these documents of the Pope's will always be the section on doctrine. And the action is simply the consequence. The action spills from the thought. Americans don't have much respect for ideas. There's historic reason for that. They prefer action. But if you say, I prefer action to ideas, that's already an idea. So even in the case of people who say, give me action, I don't care about ideas, even there is one idea that's governing the way they think. And that idea is, ideas are junk. So whichever way you look at it, ideas still govern. Even if your one idea is that all of the other ideas are junk. Aristotle once said, if you want to philosophize, you're going to philosophize. If you don't want to philosophize, you're still going to philosophize. So in any case, you're going to have to philosophize. What he meant by that is not that everybody's going to be a philosopher, but if you want to get into thinking, or if you don't want to get into thinking, one way or the other, you're going to think in order to arrive at that conclusion that I want to think or I don't want to think. Either way, you're going to think. The way the human being is constructed, some thinking always goes ahead of any action. It's common sense. Some thinking always goes ahead of any action. You can't have an action that's not preceded by some thinking. I mean, tonight I'm going to blast my mind, I'm going to get so drunk, I'm just not going to know what I'm doing. That's still a thought, obviously. That's the one thought before you got drunk. You then got drunk and you didn't know what you were doing. But the one thought that governed the whole evening was the thought, I'm going to blast my mind. And it's still a thought. Thought comes first. Always and necessarily. And action comes second. So, you know, to straighten out one's thoughts, if you want to straighten out your action, you've got to straighten out your thoughts. You've got to do some thinking. People that today don't want to hear that. They don't take thinking seriously. They don't take ideas seriously. I began with the importance of doctrine. People today generally don't take ideas seriously. And it's not just Americans, it's all over the world now. Ideas are unimportant. Let's forget about our differences of ideas. Let's just all get together. Let's forget about what divides us. Let's just concentrate on what unites us. Let's not worry too much about the arguments. That was Cardinal Castrillon to the Society quite recently. Don't let's worry about the arguments, said Cardinal Castrillon. Don't let's get into the dogmatic questions. Let's just stay with being nice and being together. Same thing, exactly the same thing. And the Society said, no. We've got to get into the basic ideas. There's a huge problem of ideas here. I mean, I can love you like crazy, but if our ideas are different, there's a great gulf. It's like a huge two cliffs meeting on the top of a huge chasm. I mean, two people can come and shake hands on top of the cliffs across this chasm, but beneath them there's a huge chasm. You don't get rid of a chasm by a handshake. You know, it's... So, I mean, the Romans can like us personally. We can like the Romans personally. Carlo Castiglione is charming. Carlo Ratzman is charming. Makes no difference. And there's no question of attacking them as persons, as men. No, absolutely not. They're good men. I mean, it doesn't matter. Let them be good men. Their ideas are wrong. Their ideas are a disaster for the church. And until they see that, it's no use handshaking, embracing as much as you like. It'll go nowhere until they get back to the questions of truth. And this is what the Pope is saying about the Sion. The Sion, they're nice guys. They're decent boys. And they've got a charismatic leader who's charming, sweet, all kinds of things. But their ideas are wrong.
How can you be a good man if all your ideas are wrong and bad and ideas lead to actions?
That's a very good question.
And they don't hire you.
That's a very good question. How can you be a really good man if your ideas are wrong and necessarily lead to wrong actions? You're quite right. Then you're not really a good man, but you are what everybody today thinks is a good man. You act like everybody thinks is a good man. You act according to what in everybody's heads is a good man. And that's Pope John Paul II. All the media love him, all the world loves him.
Like a Mason, those are good guys.
Yes, yes. You're back to Freemasonry. Yes, it's Masonry again. It's the ideal of Masonry. Forget about ideas, accept our idea. Masonry is exactly that. One idea, all ideas are junk. So we're going to have the Masonic idea. The Masonic idea, all other ideas are junk. It's still ideas that come first. So it's a good question. You're behaving like everybody thinks is a good man. You look like a good man. Everybody takes you to be a good man. Everybody treats you like a good man. All the media treat John Paul II like a good man. And, you know, not all his ideas are wrong. But by golly, he has some serious ideas, serious wrong ideas. He thinks like the seal. So he thinks he's a good man. Everybody else thinks he's a good man. It's easier to think you're a good man if everybody continually applauds you. It's easy to think you're a good man, and if you think you're a good man, that makes you kind of a good man. You're all sweet and charming and smiles, but anybody who really knows what's going on is going to say, no, this whole thing is wrong. That was Archbishop Lefebvre, Vatican II.
So by their fruits is essentially by their actions.
Yes, absolutely. It's absolutely. Don't go by the words, go by the actions. Yes. What are the actions of the Sion? To be divisive, to reject the guidance of the priests, to sow discord in the parishes and in the dioceses, to mislead many simple Catholics. That's the actions and the fruits. And that tells you it's not good. However charming and sweet and well-meaning they are, that's what they're doing. And of course, one has to remember always, the way to hell is paved with good intentions. I mean, good intentions won't hack it. Lots of people, everybody has good intentions. Today, everybody means well. Everybody's nice. Everybody's sincere. That's not enough. To put it mildly, it's not enough. On the contrary, my favorite old drunken SOB priest, whose ideas are straight, those good ideas will bear fruit in the salvation of souls, despite, let's suppose, his nasty personality. If he had a nice personality as well as the right ideas, it would be even better. But the right ideas are much more important than a nice personality. You know, and we've got to grow out of this sort of adolescent dream of everybody being sweet and nice and floating around and a huggy-huggy. It's adolescence, that. And people, the men today don't grow up. The men aren't men because of the lack of truth in their ideas. And it's a drama for the children, it's a drama for the families, it's a drama for the women. Oof. The men don't believe in what they've no longer got any grip on what life really means or what life is, the importance and value of life. Getting to heaven, honoring God, loving God, serving God, and getting to heaven. And the men don't stand for anything except liberty, liberty is really the absence of an idea. It's that one idea which is the absence of any other idea. It's liberation from any other idea, really. So liberty is not What is liberty? Liberty from or liberty for? Liberty for what? I know liberty from the Ten Commandments, liberty from George III, liberty from the colonialists, liberty from government, liberty from Washington, liberty from London. I know what is liberty from, but what am I going to have liberty for? Liberty for what? Californian, bare torso, tight shorts, elbow over the edge of his car, flicking back a can of beer, driving in his open coupe down a sunny five-lane Californian highway. Is that what liberty is for? Yeah, that's what people believe in. Liberty for material enjoyment. That's what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. Because if you're liberated from everything spiritual, there's only the material left. And the material is sunshine, drink, and all of the other pleasures. That's what it comes down to. Somebody may have a more noble idea of what liberty is for, a more noble ideal for which he's fighting in the name of liberty, but the nobleness doesn't come from liberty. It comes from somewhere else. Liberty is not got any content in itself. It means freedom, liberty, according, liberty from constraint, liberty from somebody stopping me from doing anything I want to do. What are you free for? Ah, that's another question. Let's have a look. The 15, every man's going to be a king. Every engine's going to be a chief. In civics, in economics, look at it under 17. We come now to the principal aspect, the moral aspect. Since we have seen authority is much reduced, another force is necessary to supplement it. All Indians, no chief, we don't have any authority left. Everybody's going to be good all by themselves just because we want to be good. That's the dream. It's necessary to supplement authority and provide a permanent counterweight against individual selfishness. This new principle, this new force, is going to be the love of professional interest and of public interest. That is to say, the love of the very end of the profession of society. Visualize a society in which, in the soul of everyone, along with the inborn love of personal interest and family welfare, there prevails a love for one's occupation and for the welfare of the community. Imagine this society in which, in the consciousness of everyone, personal and family interests are so subordinate that a superior interest always takes precedence over them. Could not such a society almost do without any authority? If you had such people, yes. Would it not be the embodiment of the ideal of human dignity, with each citizen having the soul of a king and each worker the soul of a master, snatched away from the pettiness of private interests and raised up to the interests of the profession, and even higher to the interests of the nation, higher still to the interests of the whole human race? It encompasses all men, even to the ends of the earth. The science fear and division is not bound by national borders. It's not France alone, it's going to be the whole world. The human heart, enlarged by the love of the commonwealth, would embrace all comrades of the same profession, all compatriots, all men. Such is the ideal of human greatness and ability to be attained through the famous trilogy, liberty, equality, fraternity. It's a dream. It's all a dream. You're just going to make people so love the community, mankind, that they're just all going to serve the interests of mankind. It's a dream. That's not the way human beings work. The three aspects are interrelated. These three elements, political, economic, and moral, are interdependent. And as we have said, the moral element is dominant. Indeed, no political democracy can survive if it is not solidly anchored in an economic democracy. But neither one nor the other is possible if they're not rooted in an awareness by the human consciousness of being invested with moral responsibilities and energies mutually commensurate. But granted the existence of that awareness, so created by conscious responsibilities and moral forces, the kind of democracy arising from it will naturally reflect in deeds the consciousness and moral forces from which it flows. In the same manner, political democracy will issue from the trade guild system. Thus, both political and economic democracies, the latter economic bearing, carrying the form of political democracy, will be fastened to unshakable bases in the very consciousness of the people. That's the dream. Everybody is going to be so virtuous that they don't need any authority. They'll just naturally and automatically all love one another more than they love themselves, and we're going to have a society of wonderful selflessness because everybody's going to be selfless. How? How are you going to make people selfless? To sum up, such is the theory, one would say, the dream of the Sion. And this is what its teaching aims at. It calls the democratic education of the people, that is, raising to its maximum the conscience and civic responsibility of everyone, from which will result economic and political democracy and the reign of justice, liberty, equality, fraternity. Well, here, let's see how he refutes it. He's on. Okay. This brief explanation, Venerable Brethren 20, will show you clearly how much reason we have for saying that the Sion opposes doctrine to doctrine. It seeks to build its city on a theory contrary to Catholic truth. It falsifies the basic and essential notions which regulate, in reality, social relations in human society. Let's go into it and prove this. The real source of authority, 21. See, so 21, the Sion is mistaken on authority. 22, it's mistaken on liberty. 23, it's mistaken on equality. 24, it's mistaken on fraternity. And 25, most basic of all, it's mistaken on dignity. It does not understand what makes the true dignity of a human being. It's not what it thinks it is. It thinks dignity consists in emancipation and liberation. No. The teenagers in our public schools are liberated. They're liberated from the prohibition of abortion. They're liberated from their parents. They're liberated from their teachers. They're liberated from having to clothe themselves decently. They're liberated from the Ten Commandments. They're liberated, liberated, liberated. And what are they? A bunch of nothings. They're poor, abandoned nothings. They're liberated, they're nothing. They're filling up the field at the hugging of the Pope's hugging in Toronto these last days. I put another article on the board by John Venari describing. He does not say that he saw fornication. He does not say that there was fornication. But he says there's just about, you know, most else. And this is an occasion presided over by the Pope. And it's... Oof, oof. All right. The real source of authority. The Sion places public authority primarily in the people. And from the people, authority then flows into the government in such a manner, however, that the authority continues to reside basically in the people. But Leo XIII condemned this doctrine in Deuteronomy, which we're going to see. That'll be the fifth of the six documents we're going to see. Because it's an important point. Where authority? Authority can't come from below upwards. Then it's not authority. If I give the authority to my boss, then I disobey it, then I take it away from him when I like. In that case, he's got no authority over me. I can't have authority over myself because I can't be over myself. I can't be on two levels at once. If I'm at this level, I can't be at the level above me. If I can't be at the level above me, I can't have authority over me. So if the people have authority over the president doesn't have authority over the people. Authority, in fact, can only come from above downwards. And what Leo XIII will say in Deuteronom Illud is that the people may elect one of their number, they're all on a level, let's say, one of their number on whom the authority of God comes down. But that man's authority over his fellow citizens comes from God. It cannot come from the fellow citizens. Because that's the dissolution that's the very dissolution of authority. I can't give a man authority over me, which at any moment I can take away. That's not authority. It's got no substance. He knows that the moment he says to me something I don't like, I'm just going to tell him to go to heaven. So he won't tell me anything I don't like. He's got to walk on eggshells. That's not authority. So, modern writers in great numbers, following the footsteps of those who call themselves philosophers, declare that all power comes from the people. Consequently, those who exercise in power in society do not exercise from their own authority, but from an authority delegated to them by the people and on the condition that it can be revoked by the will of the people from whom they held it. That's very close to the doctrine of Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. And that's the basis on which that independence took place. Quite contrary is the sentiment of Catholics who hold that the right of governing derives from God as its natural and necessary principle. And Americans say, one republic under God. At least some Americans say. And that's Catholic. So it's not as though nothing in the United States is Catholic, but there are serious problems in the principles of on which the United States is built. There are serious problems, and those serious problems, those serious anti-Catholic problems, keep creating a problem for Catholicism in the United States. You can't say anything else. Admittedly, the seal holds that authority, which it first places in the people, descends from God. But the seal says it descends from God in such a way as to return from below upwards, while in the organization of the church, power descends from above downwards. But besides its being abnormal for the delegation of power to ascend, since it is in the nature of authority to descend, Leo XIII refuted in advance this attempt to reconcile Catholic doctrine with the revolutionary ideas of modern times. It is necessary to remark that those who preside over the government of public affairs may indeed, in certain cases, be chosen by the will and judgment of the multitude, and that's not against Catholic doctrine, that the people choose their leader. There's nothing un-Catholic about that. But while this choice marks out the ruler, it does not confer upon him the authority to govern. It simply puts him in line to receive that authority from God. It does not delegate the power. It designates the person who will be invested with the power coming from on high. Because power can only come from on high. That's the error about authority. The seance dissolves authority, which is why the seance, says Pope Pius X, is internally indisciplined. Why they're indisciplined with regard to the clergy, the priests, and they're indisciplined amongst themselves. Except for the rule of iron of Saulnier, imposing his liberalism. Making sure that his liberalism prevails. But when the liberalism prevails, it's chaos. Hi, hi, hi. Ay, ay, ay. 22. The seance error on liberty. Obedience is neither diminishing nor degrading nor degenerate. This is very important. This is wisdom, as I told you. Look at all of the Catholic saints. For the rest, if the people remain the holders of power, what becomes of authority? It's a shadow. It's a myth that the leader is walking on eggshells. There's no more law, properly so-called, no more obedience. The seance acknowledges this. The secretary here in the seminary has run into cases of child abuse, and she's run into some of these fathers who abuse their own children. And she sat down with the law officers of the law, whatever it is, with some of these fathers, and the father is asked, "You can't do that to your own child, most horrible abuse and so on." He says, "I will do what I like. It's my child," and that's the attitude. Here is liberty. I do what I like. And who are you to tell me any different? Where are the police? The police are nothing. That's how it works. And that idea is soaked into the people. And I don't know how many of you know how much child abuse is going on in the homes. It's horrific. What these fathers feel themselves free to do to their own children, boys or girls, or hardly any difference. And the mothers often keep quiet because it's very difficult for the mother. You can understand that. But when the mother keeps quiet and the children appeal to their mother and the mother sides with the father, you can understand the mother. But as far as the child's concerned, the mother is as much of a as the father. The mother has betrayed them as much as the father. As far as the child's concerned, they've got traitors for parents. And that's very widespread today. I don't know how many of you know. It's very widespread. It's horrific. And it's the direct result of liberty, liberty, liberty. Because that's how it's taught in the schools. The CO acknowledges, since it demands threefold political, economic, and intellectual emancipation in the name of human dignity, the future city which is engaged in forming will have no masters and no servants, no subjugation, no class subjugated to any other, nobody above and nobody below, everybody absolutely equal. In society, in the running of society, before God is one thing, in the running of society is quite another. This system is going to have equality in society. What's going to be there? All citizens will be free, all will be comrades, all will be kings. On the airport, you won't have any porters, you will only have sky caps. Everybody's going to be a captain. The pilots are captains and the porters, the pushing baggage, are sky captains. Sky caps. Can we have on gate 3 a sky cap? Here he comes pushing a trolley to pick up some good soul. A command, a precept would be viewed as an attack upon freedom. Subordination of any form of superiority would be a diminishment of the human person and obedience a disgrace. That's the idea of the seal. Is it in this manner, venerable brethren, that the traditional doctrine of the church represents social relations even in the most perfect society? Has not, now the Pope is talking Catholicism, has not every community of people, dependent and unequal by nature, just like 15 boys, you've got 7 linebackers and 1 quarterback. Has not every community of people need of an authority to direct its activity towards the common good, to enforce its laws? And if perverse individuals are to be found in a community, should not authority be all the stronger as the selfishness of the wicked is more threatening? What's happening in this society of fathers let loose, running wild with their own children, is naturally and necessarily turning day by day into a police state. America, the United States of America, is becoming a police state. I'm sure, again, most of you know the details. Are aware of the details, and it's inevitable. Otherwise, the United States simply couldn't hang together. If the United States consisted only of these fathers tearing their own children to pieces, the United States would fall to pieces. So there's got to be a violent control to control these violent citizens, because there's no control inside. There's no discipline inside. Further, unless one greatly deceives oneself in the conception of liberty, can it be said with an atom of reason that authority and liberty are incompatible? It's a crazy idea of liberty to say that liberty means there can't be any authority. It's a crazy idea of authority to say that there can't be any liberty. Just picture a sane family, a healthy family. Does dad have authority of the children? Of course he does. Do the children have no liberty? Of course they have some liberty. But the authority and the liberty are wisely complement one another. The liberty, true liberty does not mean a total lack of authority. True authority does not mean a total lack of liberty. The two work together. True authority and true liberty work together. Can one teach that obedience is contrary to human dignity and that the ideal would be to replace obedience by accepted, consented authority? It's nonsense. It's modern nonsense. Did not St. Paul the Apostle foresee human society in all its possible stages of development when he bade the faithful to be subject to every authority? The Catholic Church says, be obedient to authority. The Catholic Church is not revolutionary. The Jews tried to make out to Pilate that our Lord was revolutionary. Pilate knew it was nonsense. Everywhere he'd had for 3 years, he'd had his centurions watching our Lord, and he knew perfectly well that our Lord taught obedience to the Roman power, because it is the power. And you obey. You do not revolt against the Jews were all dreaming of revolt. No, our Lord, no, you obey the Romans. We don't necessarily like the Romans, but you obey, because they are the power in place. They are running the society. You obey. Catholics are not revolutionaries. The FBI shouldn't need to look into the society. It should be able to trust the society. The society, if the society is Catholic, it will not be preaching revolution against the American government. Does obedience to men as the legitimate representatives of God, that is to say, in the final analysis, obedience to God, degrade man and reduce him to a level unworthy of himself? Is the religious life, which is based on obedience, all the convents and all of the monasteries of 1,000 years of Christendom? Christendom was full of convents and monasteries in which everything happened according to a very strict and tight obedience. Are we to say that all of the sisters and all of the brothers were degraded and degenerate because they lived their lives with a vow of obedience? It's ridiculous. On the contrary, these sisters and these monks were very, very dignified, very noble human beings. And it's the obedience, it's the religious obedience that made them like that. Yeah. The poor modern mind, it's firing on one engine out of 4. You know, the old plane is just still staggering through the air because one engine is still firing. But a little longer and that engine goes out and then the whole thing crashes. We're not far from a total crash of the liberal society. The modern world is built on disobedience, you could almost say. Revolt and disobedience. America is not built on revolt and disobedience. The America, the nation that you and I love, is there because of a lot of Americans that obeyed. For instance, the World War II was not won by American soldiers disobeying their officers. It was won by a stack of American soldiers obeying their officers. It was obedience that won the Second World War and not disobedience. and so on. And the Americans that built this country, the little village schools, it was all authority and obedience throughout. But in America is very powerful also this ideal of liberty and revolution. The two ideals are opposed to one another. Reasonable authority and revolution are opposed to one another. Reasonable liberty is not opposed to reasonable authority, but revolutionary liberty is deadly opposed to reasonable authority. Were the saints, the most obedient of men, just slaves and degenerates? But the poor modern mind has lost any idea of a saint. And the poor modern world needs saints like saints have never been needed before. They've got to be saints. Saint Francis of Assisi, a Padre Pio, you know, these great men of God who put again under men's eyes, so they see a true obedience and a true authority and a true liberty so that people can see how it should be. And it was these things, for them to be true, you need God. You can't have true authority, true liberty, true obedience without an idea of God. Once you bring God into it, as Leo the 13th will say in Deuteronomilad, we'll see in Deuteronomilad, once you bring God into it, all of the real problems begin to solve. Once you bring God in, the authorities, the rulers, the ruling class know that they're going to go in front of the judgment seat of God when they die. And the church teaches them the higher class you've been, the more responsibility, the more severe your judgment when you will go in front of your maker. You had better shape up or ship out, says the Catholic Church to the rulers. You had better behave yourselves and look after the people like you should look after them. That's how what the Catholic Church says to the rulers. Then the Catholic Church turns around and says to the ruled, you obey. These are the authorities. These are the rulers. They may be jerks and they may be creeps, but they have the authority and you must obey them. That's what the church teaches. The church does not teach revolution, but the church does teach to the rulers to behave themselves. And when you tell the ruled to obey and the rulers to behave themselves and look after the ruled, you've got a recipe for a healthy society. Because the ruled must obey in the name of God, because the authorities, not just because the authorities are human beings, but because the authorities are carriers of the authority of God. The rulers are carrying the authority of God, and you obey them not because they're just human beings, but because they are carrying the authority of God. So you bring God into it, you've got a completely different situation. Likewise, you threaten the rulers with the punishment of God if they don't look after the ruled while they are ruling. If you bring God into it, all of the problems begin to solve. But of course the modern mind tries to solve all of these problems completely without God. That's the basis on which modern society rests. One, dear America, one republic under God. There has been a sense of God in the United States, and that's been the glory and the strength of the United States. But this liberty and revolution ultimately turns against God, and that's the destruction of the United States. So, justice and equality. Equality is not unjust. And so democracy is not the only form of government. It's too important a paragraph to skip. 23. Teaching such doctrines and applying them to its internal organization, the Sion therefore sows erroneous and fatal notions on authority, liberty, and obedience among your Catholic youth. The same is true of justice and equality. The Sion says it's striving to establish an age of equality, which by that very fact would also be an era of greater justice. So, to the Sion, every inequality is an injustice, or at least a lessening of justice. Here we have a principle that conflicts sharply with the nature of things. It's ridiculous to pretend that 15 boys on the football field are all the same. There's going to be one thinker, seven, etc., etc. A principle that conflicts sharply with the nature of things. A principle that leads to jealousy, to injustice, and subverts any social order. And so democracy alone is supposed to bring about the reign of perfect justice? Nonsense. Nonsense. Democracy understood in the modern way is going to subvert justice. Democracy in the modern way, understood in the modern way, leads to a man like Clinton, who's a complete so-and-so. He's the embodiment of the American dream, the dream of the worst America. You can do what you like as long as you can get away with it, and there won't be any consequences. And you can trample over people how you like and get yourself admired. Just do it slick, in a slick and clever way. Make yourself admired, make people laugh, and you're going to be the hero. That's the way to live. Terrible. Terrible. Democracy destroys justice. Is this not an insult to other forms of government, which are thereby debased to the level of sterile makeshifts? An aristocracy can work perfectly well as long as the aristocrats are godly. A monarchy can work perfectly well as long as the monarch is godly. And a democracy can work perfectly well as long as the people are godly. It's not, is it a democracy or a monarchy or an aristocracy? It is, how much sense of God, of the true God, is there amongst the people and amongst the rulers? Besides, the Sionists once again clash on this point with the teaching of Pope Leo XIII in the Encyclical on Political Government, which we have already quoted. We're going to see, dear Tony Millard. It's in this volume. They could read this: justice being preserved, it is not forbidden to the people to choose for themselves the form of government which best corresponds with their character or with the institutions and customs handed down by their forefathers. In France, if France becomes Catholic again, it will absolutely likely go back to being a monarchy. If the United States becomes Catholic, it will not necessarily cease to be a democracy. Not necessarily. There's nothing necessarily unworkable in a democracy or un-Catholic in a democracy as long as the people do not think that they are the source of authority. As long as the people recognize that authority comes from God, a democracy is workable. It's Catholic. The encyclical alludes to the three well-known forms of government, monarchy, aristocracy, democracy, implying that justice is compatible with any of them. Does not the encyclical on the condition of the working class, we'll also see that one, that's Rerum Novarum, state clearly that justice can be restored within the existing social setup, since it indicates the means of doing so? So democracy does not enjoy a special privilege. The Sionists who maintain the view that democracy, like Americanists, democracy is the only legitimate form of government, either turn a deaf ear to the teaching of the church, or they form for themselves an idea of justice and equality, which is not Catholic. The modern people just don't think like Catholics. They don't have an inkling of the Catholic truth. Fraternity against charity. It's absolutely worth reading, but it's what I said, a Christianity with a tomahawk. If you separate fraternity, brotherhood, from Christian charity, your fraternity is going to turn into hatred and dissension. Finally, human dignity. This is a doozy, 25, page 255. This is one of the crunch paragraphs of the whole piece. Finally, at the root of all their fallacies on social questions lie the false hopes of the Sionists on human dignity, their false understanding of human dignity. According to them, man will be a man truly worthy of the name only when he has acquired a strong, enlightened, and independent consciousness, able to do without a master, obeying only himself, and able to assume the most demanding responsibilities, like riding down all the freeways on a big Harley Davidson without faltering. Your rugged individualist with a bandana. Is that your ideal human being? Is that the most dignified of human beings? Is that the supreme example of human dignity? I have got nothing against these motor bicyclists. They may be good guys. But I would say there is a higher form of human being than just one of these easy riders. God bless the easy riders, as long as they obey the law and keep the Ten Commandments. God love them. There's no sin about riding down the highway in a bandana. But all I would say is there is a higher form of being a human being than riding down the highway in a bandana.
I see you're getting in the spirit of Sturgis, which starts on Sunday.
So they're all going to be there in Sturgis, South Dakota, which is right next to Tony in Rapid City. Oh my, oh my, oh my. Hey, go easy. You know, there's not a sin in, as long as they're decent. And there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing indecent about a bandana. There's nothing indecent about a leather jacket and leather trousers. That's not un-Catholic. There's nothing indecent about a Harley Davidson, a big motorbike, as long as you're not using it to make too much noise at night when people are trying to sleep, or as long as you're riding it over little babies. You know, I mean, let's get clear. That's not there's quite a lot in that way of life which isn't sinful. But if you regard that way of life as an ideal, liberty and freedom and, it doesn't go very high. There's a much higher dignity than that.
The women in the late on those Hollywood theorists out there, Sturgis, don't have bandanas on.
The morals, I mean, you and I guess at the morals of and that, of course, the free and easy way of life goes together frequently with free and easy morals, free and easy women, free and easy men, and then of course they're breaking the Ten Commandments. That's not Catholic. You see, human dignity. The man who operates on his own, rides on his own, stands on his own, the rugged individualist, that's the ideal of the seal. And if you make that your ideal, you're not going to get very much higher than your easy riders. Such are the big words by which human pride is exalted, like the dream carrying man away without light, without guidance, without help, into the realm of illusion, in which he will be destroyed by his own errors and passions while awaiting the glorious day of his full consciousness. Gosh, how wise. How wise. In other words, your easy riders are being destroyed by their illusions, and it's a matter of time before they'd be destroyed by an accident, or destroyed by knifing one another, or destroyed by something or other. It's a life of illusion and error and passion. And that great day, when will it come? When they're going to achieve full consciousness. Unless human nature can be changed, which is not within the power of the Sionists. Key idea. Human nature exists. It's a given. And not the most revolutionary of revolutionaries can change it. And the nature of woman as opposed to man is a given. And the nature of man as opposed to woman is a given. And the feminists can't change it. And the communists can't change it. And the male wimps can't change it. And the faggots can't change it. Men are the way God's made them. And women are the ways God's made them. And to be wise and to live happily, you live in accordance with nature and not try to revolt against it. But the whole modern world, the whole idea of the modern world is to break free from any given in the name of liberty. Given, every given is a prison, remember. Every given is a prison, including 2 and 2 equals 4. Did the saints who brought human dignity to its highest point possess that kind of dignity? And what of the lowly of this earth who are unable to rise so high, but are content to plow their furrow? Sion. So you see, the Pope is coming back to take all of these ordinary, simple folk down all of these centuries who've plowed the fields behind a humble plow. Are you going to say because they were leading a humble plow life they lack dignity? On the contrary, there's a lot more dignity in the simple peasant home than there is in many a suburban home. Woof. I remember a seminarian once saying to me, the brother-in-law of a seminarian who said that he married the sister of a seminarian, and he said that this girl, who was the sister of a seminarian, once took him, her husband, around their suburb, which was in Chicago. And she, the girl, the sister of the seminarian, who married this boy, said, in that home, and she went round the suburb, and in that home, and she counted off the scandals, the immoralities in each of these beautiful suburban houses. Is that dignity in these suburban homes? And I'm sure I'm talking about things that you know about. Whereas you take those humble peasant hovels where, you know, they're too poor to fool around. They've not got the money, they've not got the time. They've got to spend the day plowing in order to live. There's a lot more dignity in the humble hovel than there is in the rich suburban home of real human dignity. They who are diligently discharging their duties with Christian humility, obedience, and patience, are they not also worthy of being called men? Should they all become easy riders in order to be dignified as men? Will not our Lord take these humble people one day out of their obscurity and place them in heaven among the princes of his people? See, the religious perspective makes all the difference. If I know that this life is only this poor little life, and then there's the next life, which is going to last for eternity, and the next life is the one that matters, then that puts a completely different complexion upon this little life. The problem with the modern world is that it doesn't believe in eternity. It's got no idea of the next life. And so everything is in this life. And so the equality has got to be, an equality of eternity has got to be jam-packed into this poor little life lasting 70 years. in an equality of eternity, a dignity of eternity, won't fit in 70 years. But the modern world is trying to make it fit because it's stopped believing in eternity. It's a calamity. So, note 25, especially note 25. Man's dignity does not consist in his prideful independence. It's not your easy rider who is your model of what makes a man. See your action. We move into the final great section. Firstly, within the Sion, and then within the church, within the Sion. Putting these errors into practice, the Sion has no internal hierarchy. It's disorder inside the Sion, except the master who is imposing and making and control and enforcing liberalism with an iron fist, Marc Saulnier. Otherwise, no internal hierarchy. The communists began fighting in Spain without officers. It didn't work. It did not work. It was according to their principles. It did not work. So rapidly, they had officers because they had to fight. They had to, otherwise they'd have been just crushed by Franco. So they fought by having officers. There had to be subjugation, otherwise it was immediate defeat. Somebody has to be subjugated to somebody else. There's nothing necessarily wrong with subjugation. Hence, too, their indiscipline, indocility, and disobedience towards the church, and those are the fruits. The Sion, again, that's another doozy, 29. It's a very short paragraph, bottom of page 257. We cannot, halfway down to 257, we cannot, with all our patience, overcome a just feeling of indignation. Now then, distrust of the church, their mother, is being instilled into the minds of these Catholic youngsters. They are being taught that after 19 centuries, she has not yet been able to build up in this world a society on true foundations. And that's what John Paul II is now teaching every young Catholic. He apologizes for almost everything the Catholic Church has ever done. And he's making out to the youngsters, only now that the church is adopting the principles of the Sion, is the church at last moving into a great, brave new age. We're at last getting the real church. And the poor youngsters, how can they not believe it? It's the Pope who's saying it. And Venari says, these poor youngsters, they're betrayed. They're betrayed. I pity them, he says. They've been given nothing. They've been given nothing. When a young, often when a young, pardon my say, we're in the United States, but the same thing in Britain, please. And I'm not attacking the United States. I love the United States. I love the United States, okay? I love the United States, absolutely. But it's on my own country, I could say far nasty things about it. But here in the United States, when a young, it happens in the seminary, you know, when a young American comes to the seminary and realizes how little he knows of what he should know, of what he could have spent the last 10-15 years easily learning, and if he'd have it all, now that he's in one, two, and he has to try to catch up on all of that he's not learned for the last 10, he realizes he's been sold a bill of goods. School was easy. He just threw frisbees all day long and ran around with the girls. School was easy. There was no discipline. There was no learning. But he didn't learn anything. No sweat, no sweet. It's on the African mammy lorries in West Africa. Remember, you know, the mammy lorries. You get a mammy lorry in West Africa is a truck with benches put in the back, and African mammies, you can fit about two side by side in one truck. That's the way African mammies are built. They're called mammy trucks. And they have beautiful sayings painted in all bright, all the colors of the rainbow on the side of the truck. And one of them I can never forget is, no sweat, no sweet. You've got to suffer in order to gain. And if the schools, if suffering is taken out of the schools, all the gain will be taken out of the schools. And if the suffering is taken out of religion, all the gain is taken out of religion. And if the suffering is taken out of life, all the gain is taken out of life. We have to suffer in order to gain. No pain, no gain. No sweat, no sweet. Always the same principle. So, the Sion 29, the distrust of the church is being instilled into the minds of the youngsters. They are being taught that after 19 centuries, the church has not yet been able to build up in this world a society on true foundations. The church has not yet understood the true notions of authority, liberty, equality, fraternity, and human dignity. That's what John Paul II thinks. And he's preaching the new notions. The youngsters are told that the great bishops and kings who made France what it is and governed so gloriously, the great bishops and kings, because they were selfless men, they were truly noble, they did their duty and they truly looked after the people because they feared God and they knew that when they went in front of the judgment seat of God, they'd have to answer for how they used their authority. And therefore they used their authority on Catholic principles and looked after the people and governed France gloriously and built up France to what it was. The same is true for any Catholic nation. St. Stephen of Hungary, St. Ferdinand of Spain, St. Edward of England, those Catholic nations, the nations of Christendom. The nations that once were Catholic. And you've got to envisage the United States becoming Catholic. And you and I have got to wish that the United States is really Catholic. Wow. You and I have got to wish that people submit to givens instead of treating givens as prisons. Whew. Whew. But that's the road to happiness, both in this life and especially in eternity. And if the public life, because the public life of a nation makes a great difference to the private lives and the private beliefs. And if a nation is straight publicly, it's much easier for the private religion. But you know, in no nation today is public life straight. Public life has been bent by these errors in all of the nations. But that doesn't mean to say that God has abandoned the individuals, but it's much more difficult. It's more difficult for the individual. No question about that. The glorious bishops and kings who made France what it is have not, to say they have not been able to give their people true justice and true happiness because they did not possess the Sionist ideal? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. As though only in the 19th or in the 20th century we've at last understood. As though all of our ancestors from the time of our Lord Jesus Christ through to 1800 were completely wrong. As though only the modern age has got any sense or wisdom. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. But that's what modern people think. Because we've got toasters that play golf, we're smart, and all previous ages aren't. You have to get Brother Marcel to do a cartoon of a toaster playing golf. He'd do a good one. So we come to 257:29. The breath of the revolution has passed this way. And we can conclude that while the social doctrines of the Sion are erroneous, its spirit is dangerous and its education disastrous. Because it's inculcating errors, ideas of subversion, ideas of revolution, ideas that look good. Liberty, equality, freedom, fraternity, and so on, emancipation. It looks good, but it's the destruction of society. And it's the grave endangering of eternal life for millions and millions of souls. It's putting the private lives of all of the citizens in such states adopting these false principles, the private life of the citizens is put under a huge pressure to believe in these false ideals. And what happens to religion? What happens to Catholicism in a nation like this? It becomes just a little private affair. It's all right for you to be a Catholic so long as you don't take your Catholicism so seriously that you think the whole country should be Catholic and that you will strive to make the whole country Catholic. Now, that's a no-no. Your religion is perfectly okay so long as you don't take it too seriously. And as long as the Protestants don't take theirs too seriously and the Mohammedans don't take theirs too seriously, we'll all be able to get on together and we'll all live together and we'll all be happy, happy, lovey, lovey. And we'll all fall into hell. That's it. So the real Catholicism can't live with let's all just take our religion not too seriously. The real religion can't live with that. In Rome in the very early days of the church, the Romans ran a great empire and they had all kinds of religions in Rome and all the religions were allowed in Rome. And then along came the Christians, and the Christians said, these are devils, this is idolatry, this is false worship. The Romans said, what? All of you are worshipping devils, said the Christian, that these virgins of 13, 14 years old. All of your religions, what? Your Majesty, the Emperor, I'm sorry, that's the truth. It's what I learned in my catechism, and I know it's true. If you say that, I'm going to torture you. Your Majesty, I can't say any differently. And they took these 12, 13, 14-year-old girls and tore them to pieces. And the girls became martyrs, St. Agnes, St. Lucy, St. Cecilia, St. Anastasia. They are the founding saints of the Catholic Church. Within 300 years, Rome said, yes, you're right. There is only one true religion. There can't be a smorgasbord of religions. You can't have everyone believing in his own little religion, then mixing it all together in one great mixture. You can't do that. According to Catholicism, you can't do that. Any religion that contradicts all religions that aren't Catholic in some way contradict Catholicism. Catholicism is the truth. I didn't make it true. It's not true because I say so. It's true because it comes from our Lord Jesus Christ, who's God. And it's the only religion that comes from our Lord Jesus Christ, who's God. So he... Anybody that's contradicting it is contradicting God. They're lying, whether they mean it or not, whether they're sincere or not, whether they're well-intentioned or not. They're building stairs out of sand. You can't make a healthy society out of stairs in sand. You can't make a healthy society in which everybody accepts to have all kinds of different religions. It can't be. Wow. See how far the modern age has gone. See how far it's gone wrong and why it's now in free fall. Because these modern principles are more accepted, more widely accepted than ever. And that's why everything is falling to pieces at a huge speed. And why especially, and I'm sure many of you know this, why the families are falling to pieces. Because as society disintegrates, the families disintegrate. And it's the same ideas of liberty and equality and human rights that are destroying the family. What is between husband and wife? It's a bond. What's a bond? It's the opposite of liberty. It's a tie. So liberty is going to dissolve that tie between husband and wife. What's equality? Equality says everybody's got to be on the same level. What is in the family? The parents are above the children. The parents are older and wiser and smarter, and they tell the children what to do. And the children are meant to obey. That's obvious. Should be obvious. But equality, oh no, 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 no. There's going to be no parents telling children what to do. So the daddy is always going to say, John, would you please do this? Or Mary, or mummy will say, Mary, would you please do this? Parents should not say please to their children. Parents should tell their children what to do. They should be right in what they tell them to do. And they should tell them to do it. And they should expect the children to do it without having to be asked twice and without the word please. That's how it ought to work. And that's sanity. And then the children will grow up, and when the children become parents, they will tell their children what to do without saying please. Please is democracy inside the family. Please is the dissolution inside the family. For parents to say please to the children is the beginning of the dissolution of the family, or it's a stage well on the way to the dissolution of the family.